Reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord.
The Pharisees went out and took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. When Jesus realized this, he withdrew from that place. Many people followed him, and he cured them all, but he warned them not to make him known. This was to fulfill what had been spoken through Isaiah the prophet. Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom I delight. I shall place my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not contend or cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, a smoldering wick he will not quench. Until he brings justice to victory, and in his name, the Gentiles will hope. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
It's a shocking opening sentence to today's Gospel. The Pharisees, these people who had the reputation for being extraordinarily religious, whereas the ordinary Jew would fast once a year, they would fast twice a week. Whereas the ordinary Jew would pray once a day, they would pray three times a day. Whereas the ordinary Jew would tithe just on a small list of things to God, the Pharisees would tithe everything that they owned. They became the experts of putting every interpretation of the scribe about the Mosaic Law into practice. They were by far those with a reputation for being the most religious among the Jews. The Pharisees went out and took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. Why? This is the first real sign of the opposition to Jesus. And it's important for us to confront why they were so opposed. Saw it yesterday in Jesus' teaching about the Sabbath, when his disciples who were traveling with him were hungry, showed how they were truly living spiritual poverty, were walking through the fields of grain on the Sabbath. They were plucking the heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands, and then eating them raw. That was the way that they were going to eat. This wasn't stealing, because the book of Deuteronomy explicitly gave wayfarers the divine permission to do this. That God had created all of this, not just for the earthly owners, but for the people who are really hungry, that the Lord hears the cry of poor. That's fine. But there was opposition to Jesus, because they were doing this minimal work on the Sabbath. And the scribes had determined, so that they wouldn't violate the third commandment to keep holy the Lord's day, that they were going to draw a huge fence around it so that they wouldn't even get close to breaking the commandment not to defame the Lord's day, that they wouldn't do any work whatsoever if it accounted to more than the effort to lift two figs. And so, in their opinion, God would rather have wanted his sons to starve on the Lord's day, rather than to do just this minimal work when they were hungry. The Pharisees were far more concerned with the laws than with the legislator, the capital L. Immediately thereafter, Jesus went to a synagogue. We have it in the other evangelists, so the church doesn't give us that passage today, but while he's preaching in the synagogue, Jesus sees a man with a withered hand. And he asks him to come out in front of everybody and to stretch out his hand. And Jesus cured his paralysis. And again, they were outraged that Jesus would do this work of charity, this work of love, on the Lord's day. Jesus gave three different examples to show how hypocritical they were. first example he said was when David went into Abiathar, the high priest's house, when his soldiers were fighting the battle for the Lord against the Philistines, took the bread that was normally after it had been for 12 days before the Ark of the Covenant, six loaves would be changed every Sabbath, and the six loaves that were taken away would be given to the priest to eat. It was, in a sense, consecrated over. The priests were the only ones normally to eat it. But David said, what we're doing for the Lord is far more important. Please, my soldiers are hungry. And Jesus said, nobody castigates David as if he had done anything wrong. Then he went on to say that on the Sabbath, all the priests who are in the temple area, they're sacrificing thousands of animals every day. Just think about how much work needs to be done in the temple on the Sabbath. And nobody says they're blaspheming because they're doing an act of worship for the Lord. And then when the man with the withered hand, he said, if any of you had an animal that fell into a ditch on the Sabbath, you'd all get your animal out of the ditch. Why don't you give a hoot about this man who has suffered with the withered hand, meaning that he wasn't able to work any longer because his hand was injured? Why do you care for the animals more than you do for this man? And because of this teaching about the Sabbath, that the Sabbath was a day to restore us in a relationship with God and a relationship with others, to help us to keep the twofold command of loving God with 100% of our mind, heart, soul, and strength, and loving our neighbors with all we are and have, they were conspiring to put Jesus to death because this was the front-head collision with their understanding of the Mosaic Law and their rigidity in staying at the fences rather than getting to the heart. It's important for us to know, in a culture in which so many don't take the Sabbath seriously, that Jesus is willing to die for the real meaning of the Sabbath. But let's look at the Pharisees. They weren't really open to the deeper meaning of what Jesus was communicating. So these very religious people began to plot Jesus' assassination. Today's first reading from the prophet Micah. Micah speaks to his own age, but then also to Jesus' age and even to our own age. Woe to those who plan iniquity, who work out evil on their couches, who mark out boundaries by lot in the assembly of the Lord at the very end. In other words, in the temple area, they were rolling dice in order to determine what the new boundaries were going to be when they were going to be stealing the poor people's property. And they were doing it all in the Lord's house. Ridiculous. But how they had perverted God and God's law and their own status among his people in order to do something that God would never approve of. So Jesus had come to change that approach to religion, to give us a new wineskin to be able to receive the new wine, to bring it back to its true meaning. And he knew he was going to die for it, and this was the first prophecy of that death. So what was Jesus' response? When Jesus realized this, he withdrew from that place. He withdrew not because he was a chicken. He would have his time in which he would face him straight on. He still had more work to do. But on this occasion, he withdrew from that place to draw the crowds from the Pharisee, to protect his sheep as a good shepherd. Jesus realized that. He withdrew from that place. Many people followed him. And this is one of the most beautiful phrases in all of the gospel. And he cured them all. He didn't just cure the sick. He didn't just cast out demons. He didn't, in this case, raise the dead. He cured them all. Because everybody needed some form of healing, some form of God's pressing the reset button in their life. Jesus was doing that for all of them. And he needed to draw them away from the Pharisees precisely to do that. And then God the Father, in a sense, spoke through the prophet Matthew in this case. We know that there are three times that God the Father speaks explicitly in the Gospel, at Jesus' baptism and his transfiguration during the Last Supper. But many of the early fathers of the church, the great saints, said that this is the fourth time that God the Father was speaking. Through the words of the prophet Isaiah, St. Matthew reminds us, "Behold my servant whom I have chosen." That word for servant in Greek is pais, which basically means son. My son, my servant, my obedient son in a particular way, it's even stronger. We get pedagogy from this word, pais. My servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom I delight, I shall place my spirit upon him. He will proclaim justice, not just to the Jews, but to all the nations. He'll not contend or cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. That's why he had told them not to make him known, because he wasn't going to be merely a loudspeaker. That was John the Baptist's mission. Jesus was to enflesh what God had sent him into the world to do, to show us what Jesus had indicated to us early this week when he said, "Learn me, for I am meek and humble of heart." Jesus was showing that meekness and that humility here. Not contend or cry out. A bruised reed he won't break. A smoldering wick he won't quench. Until he brings justice to victory. And in his name the Gentiles will hope. Two times this hope will be brought to all the nation. Jesus' whole mission is to bring justice to victory. And he's going to bring justice to victory through seeming defeat on Calvary. Because it was going to be a victory of humility and meekness and right relationship. It was going to restore us to how we are supposed to live before the Lord. Today's readings from the 15th Saturday of Ordinary Time are a perfect preparation for tomorrow's Gospel in year C. The scene of Mary and Martha and Jesus in the house of Bethany, in which Jesus reveals that really only one thing is necessary, and that Mary had chosen that better part. Jesus is describing in his whole living of the Sabbath precisely how to become more and more wise, like Mary of Bethany, in choosing to put God first. Today we have an illustration of someone who has done that, and the exact contrast to the type of behavior of the Pharisees. The Blessed Virgin, under her title of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, who shows us this humility for which all generations will call her blessed, who shows us this meekness, this great courage in following the Lord with great strength but without ostentation, the type of strength that would allow her to remain standing rather than swooning at the foot of the cross. And Mary wants to enroll us in her school so that we might, in fact, become more and more like the one God the Father describes as my son, my obedient daughter, whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom I delight, upon whom I have placed my spirit. Mary is the one who trains us how to do that. All of us have been enrolled in the confraternity of Our Lady of Mount Carmel through the induction with the scapular. And that is an act, a trifold act, as the Carmelites always say. First is an act of belonging, that we put on Mary's own clothes, her own external, loving, devout relationship to the Lord, which signifies something on the inside, which is an act of consecration, the second part. That we separate ourselves from other things in order to be with her in the love of the Lord. And that consecration leads to imitation, the third part, in which we seek to emulate Mary's virtues. Today, as we honor her under the title of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, she's praying for us so that we might honor her best through this type of holy imitation, this type of relationship with her son, this type of prioritizing what he prioritizes living the day of the Lord the way He taught us to, so that that day of the Lord could become every day of our week. Learning Him in all His ways and seeking to choose Him just like she constantly did. Today she would point out for us that the same Jesus that she carried in her womb, same Jesus she held in her arms, same Jesus she bathed, same Jesus she brought to the temple on same day, same Jesus Joseph brought to the synagogue on Saturdays, same Jesus who hung upon the cross for our salvation, we're about to receive. As we prepare to behold that Lamb, let us behold the obedient Son whom God the Father has chosen. And in this assembly of the Lord, let us not cast lots for taking the boundaries of others, but let us allow the Lord to strengthen us so that He might cast us out as His good seed in the middle of the world, so that like Mary, we might bring Christ to them, and with Mary, one day with them, celebrate Christ's presence forever. Our Lady of Mount Carmel.
Thank you.